The use of artificial intelligence, or AI, has been around since the 1950s. But even with rapid growth in the technology for a wide range of applications, there's still a lot that many of us don't understand about AI's benefits, its potential to help businesses, as well as the risks. How can computer learning technology help streamline work and create efficiencies for small businesses, and what are the red flags? We'll learn about the new AI Business Center for Alaska today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. You may realize that if you have a smart speaker and ask it a question, you're using AI. Did you also know that AI can write a business plan, or that AI helped speed up the time needed for developing the COVID-19 vaccine? AI has a growing list of applications, and our guests today are well-versed in the current potential and what may be on the horizon for improvements in the future. In the studio today is Gretchen Foskey. Gretchen is the Director of Special Programs and Strategy at the Alaska Small Business Development Center in Anchorage. On the line today with us is Dr. Helen Wisnowski, and Dr. Wisnowski is a professor of entrepreneurship and teaches marketing, logistics, and business analytics within the College of Business and Public Policy at UAA. Excuse me. Dr. Wisnowski has been teaching courses on AI for 5 years, and she is also the Marion Porter Endowed Chair at UAA. And in the studio with us is Meredith Noble. And Meredith is the CEO and co-founder of LearnGrantWriting.org. Welcome, all of you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Great. Thanks so much. And you Alaskans can join us if you have questions. Are you interested in learning how AI might help you get a new business idea off the ground? Or how it might enhance your existing business? Are you worried about AI and have questions about how it should be controlled? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. Last week, someone told me I gave the numbers out too fast, so I'm trying to go slow. If you are in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 907-550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So Gretchen, I want to start with you. The new AI Center opened very recently, only about a week or so ago. You said the center opened in response to questions from business owners. What did you hear from them? Did they have specific ideas for how they want to use AI, or general questions about how it can help them?
It's really interesting. In my experience, it seems like people's questions about AI are kind of either on the eager, excited side or on the sort of trepidatious, I'm worried about this thing side. Right now, because AI is so new to the general public, to people like Dr. Wisnowski, it's not new. She's been working in that field for years. But to people like me and to many business owners, it's pretty new. And so people are wondering, how can I harness this power to help my business? Or is this going to threaten my business? So people are really split. We actually just held a summit focused all on AI. And the purpose wasn't to say, like, this is the future or this is going to ruin our world. The focus was, this is a tool. Let's think about how we can use it together so that we can find a way through and be ready for it.
So what does the AI Center offer?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're kind of threefold. Our immediate focus is actually down to the talents of two of our business advisors, Carlos and Ian. They've been developing in-house tools to support our business advisors, who then in turn support small businesses. And so that's things like helping people write their business plan. And it's not writing the business plan for them. It's taking the knowledge that they already have and putting it into a format and then kind of formalizing it. And so one of the things I like to tell people about AI when we're talking about it, especially the large language models like ChatGPT that a lot of people are familiar with, is that is just a place to start. It's just to help you get past the blank page. It's to help you have something to edit. In my opinion, I don't think AI should ever actually replace the work that you're doing yourself when it comes to that critical thinking and promoting your business. And so the tools that Carlos and Ian have developed really bridge that gap for people. They take away the blank page, they give them something to work with, but it is still the business owner who's the one actually creating. So that's the first part, tools like that. The second part is We're trying. I'm not going to say we are expert because there's so much to learn and so much going on, but we're trying to understand some of the tools that are out there. And so if someone comes to us and says, oh, I really am interested in marketing, how can AI help me with marketing? We might be able to say, here's a couple tools you should look at. Again, not expert. We're learning along with everyone else, but we have the capacity to kind of do that learning. So we're trying that way. And then the third is just building a community of people who want to be included in conversations about AI. And so those are the three thrusts for the AI Resource Center.
Well, thank you. Thanks for getting us started here. Dr. Wojnarowski, Helena, if I can use your first name, I'd like to turn to you now. You started teaching an AI course 5 years ago. What prompted you to start that?
I've been involved in the field of AI for many years. I don't want to say how many, that will kind of date me, but I've been involved in the evolution of AI, in particular in neural networks. And I saw the direction that AI was going in. And I said, our students really need training in AI. As the College of Business and Public Policy, we're creating our leaders and executives, but they don't have to know how to code a neural network or how to do programming, but they do know how to use AI. So I looked around the college and I said, we need a course in AI, but to also include the applications of AI and how to use AI, because that's what our future leaders will need. And I also am the co-founder and co-director of the Alaska Data Science and AI Lab. And that gives students a hands-on experiential learning in AI. And so that complements the course, or the students in the course can use that lab. But it was really the need. And I saw where AI was going. We are in early stages now for the narrow AI, but we also have generative AI, and that's where the ChatGPT comes in. And we're moving to general AI. And if you have to prepare students for careers, and careers in AI are really growing. So those are some of the reasons that I started the course.
Fantastic. Thank you for describing that. You also mentioned earlier that in order to appreciate AI, we need to understand how it's evolved over the decades. Give us a little snapshot about how that evolution has come about.
Okay. Well, if you could answer me, all this people in the studio with you, when do you think AI started?
When it started? Well,
this is a trick question.
I think it goes back to the 50s.
But. Or, yeah, early 1900s. There's some sort of trick question in here. I can't remember. Not a few years ago.
A trick question. All right,
we're
tell
on
us.
To you, well, Helena.
It actually started in the 1600s with Descartes.
Wow.
And that was more a philosophical discussion. But you're right, the 1950s brought about a lot of the developments in AI. But that actually started with coining the phrase artificial intelligence. That was done at a conference in Dartmouth in the 1950s. 1956, first commercial robot, the Unimate, was created and actually put in factories in General Motors in New Jersey. In 1970s, expert systems were born, and they were a rule-based model, a computer system that emulates decision-making ability of the human expert. But in the 1980s, the big shift to statistical-based neural networks began, and that was really DARPA was the driver behind that with their strategic computing initiative, and I was actually a part of it. And what distinguished that from other programs was that DARPA decided to advance and fund an entire research front and the development of computer technology and hardware simultaneously. So that was a big turning point, pivotal point, and I was excited to be a part of that. And that's where I actually created advances in neural networks. So why is the explosion now, you might ask, right? Well, advances in algorithms. So for example, neural networks evolved into deep learning and other forms like convolutional neural networks. Advances in computer technology, And adoption of AI and the realization that it had tremendous opportunities for economic development. But the key factor is the convergence of emerging technologies with AI. That means AI, the Internet of Things, robotics, digital twins, and there's a whole list of other technologies that have converged and melded, if you will, with AI. And that's why we have the explosion now.
And we'll delve into...
I know that's a long answer to your question. I apologize for that, but I get excited when I talk about it.
Well, that's why we have you on today. We'll delve into some of those areas that you discussed in a little while, but I want to remind folks, if you're just tuning in, this is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about artificial intelligence, AI, and its applications for business settings, especially for small business. There's a new AI center for small business in Anchorage at the Alaska Small Business Development Center. And our guests today are Gretchen Foskey, who is the Director of Special Programs and Strategy at the Alaska Small Business Development Center in Anchorage. Dr. Helena Wisnowski is a professor of entrepreneurship and teaches marketing, logistics, and business analytics within the College of Business and Public Policy at UAA and is also the Marion Porter Endowed Chair. And Meredith Noble is in the studio with us, and Meredith is the CEO and co-founder of LearnGrantWriting.org. We're going to find out how AI is helping her business in just a moment. You can join our conversation statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Meredith, you had custom AI programs built specifically for your customers. First, tell us a little bit about your organization, Learn Grant Writing, and then talk about these specific programs and what you are aiming to do there.
Certainly. All right. So I teach people how to write grants and make money doing it. Now, when ChatGPT became mainstream last December, so I'm benefiting from all the hard work of people like Dr. Wisnowski. So I'm getting to come in as a young business owner and leverage these tools immediately. So I looked at it right away and tried a couple of different things. I had three distinct different efforts that didn't go anywhere. So that's one key point, is that it is an experiential field. Like, you're not going to get it right the first time. But then I ended up going to a mastermind, and I met someone in Canada who was using AI to assist in writing grant applications. And they really broke the model of traditional consulting. And I found that so intriguing that I asked if they could help me basically work with my students inside of our program to help them deliver the deliverables common in the field of grant writing faster, with more ease, with higher value. And that is what we built last fall. And then we launched it literally just a couple months ago, and it has been taking folks, you know, from maybe a writing piece that would take 8 hours down to 45 minutes, right? So it's allowing you to just move so much faster and produce such better product in terms of, you know, the bones of a grant application or the funding strategy, what grants you're going to go after, et cetera. So right now we're just keeping that inside my community. It's not public and available for purchase. And part of that is because I have a lot of copycatters in my industry, and I realize this is actually a moat builder. Like, they can't copy this. This is an incredible advantage. And so I'm keeping it internal right now. And we maybe in a moment we can talk about where I'm going to take it next, but it's been a blast.
Well, that sounds very exciting. I think when you were talking about the shaved timeline in developing a grant proposal, and I'm thinking back to the late 90s when I helped develop a nonprofit, and going through that IRS paperwork was kind of terrifying. Mm-hmm. Really, it was this huge stack. So programs that can help you cut through that are certainly valuable because time is worth a lot. Mm-hmm. Meredith, who is your business aimed at? Is it people who want to write grants for other projects, or people who are writing grants for themselves?
Mostly the first. So most people that are coming to me, okay, 15% of my customer base are working in a nonprofit already, and they're looking to perfect their skills. But the bulk of the people I appeal to are looking for a different lifestyle. I often get moms, nearing retirees, folks that are looking for more lifestyle freedom, and grant writing can be a vehicle for that because you can do it from anywhere. So, and if you want to do something that's meaningful, it's flexible, it has a lot of freedom, grant writing is an incredible career for that. So that's who I have, and I've got customers all over the U.S., but actually all over the world as well. And it's pretty remarkable what you can run from literally a a small office in Alaska.
That is exciting to think about the prospects for the future. And as we look to develop the kind of shore up the economy in the state and create new jobs. Gretchen, for a small business that comes to you and wants to find out how to use AI tools, what does it cost and how much training does it take for a business owner to be able to really avail themselves of this?
That's a great question. I'm happy to share that the Alaska Small Business Development Center offers our services for the most part at no cost. We have a few workshops that are maybe like $25 or something. There's a range depending on what they are, but most of our services, I would say like over 97% of our services are no cost for people. So you're not going to spend a lot of money coming to us to work with AI. I think if you're digging into using tools yourself, a lot of the tools have sort of like the annual subscription package thing where you pay once a year or you pay every month. I think we're all familiar with that from subscriptions like Netflix, that kind of thing. Or you can really invest in like private memberships. I think ChatGPT has multiple levels. That's one that a lot of people are familiar with. And so you could spend $5 a month. You could spend $500 a month or more. I'd be interested to see what Meredith thinks about that since she's actually like actively building with those tools.
Mm-hmm. Meredith.
Certainly. All right. So a little vulnerable moment, but I actually let go a marketing director last week. And she was an expensive hire for us. Harvard educated, came from a real big girl company. Like, we couldn't believe she'd come to work for our startup, but it didn't work out. And part of it was because she wasn't leveraging any AI tools as a part of her workflow in marketing. And so when I looked at the $15K that was her monthly expense with salary and benefits, I realized I could pay for a lot of AI tools with that, a lot of capacity. Now, I still need a human that's coordinating how all these pieces work together, the critical thinking. I mean, there's still a huge volume of human aspect behind it. But yet, when I look at that, I'm not going to replace that position right now until we are many millions larger. And that is a complete shift in perspective that I don't think I would have had a year ago.
You know, I'm so glad that you raised that because I know that that is a big fear for people. And Gretchen, mm-hmm. do you think that one of the main uses or one of the uses will be to reduce staff levels or helps? Or will it be to help staffers do a better job?
One of the things we say often at SBDC is that your job isn't going to be replaced by AI. It's going to be replaced by someone who knows how to use AI. And so that is, I guess, a call out to anyone who's thinking whether or not they need to learn about this. They should probably learn about it. I liken AI as it's similar in disrupting everything like the internet or social media. It's really going to be a sea change. And so, unfortunately, yes, some people probably are going to lose their jobs. But my hope is that they can find new jobs that allow them to use different skills.
Well, and along those lines, does the Small Business Center or Helena, maybe this is an area that you could help us better understand. How can people get those skills? I mean, where are they going to learn if you're not in a business setting now, but you want to learn to, you know, brush up your skills so that you can be a viable candidate? I mean, it would be like saying you're going job hunting and you don't have an email address in this day and age, you know? So what's available to help people get those skills if they're not current?
So there are some people who could benefit from Helena. Sorry. I'll just jump in real fast, Helena, and then turn it over to you. So people who want to take a real deep dive should definitely take classes from Helena. I mean, she is brilliant. She is a leading thinker in Alaska and beyond about this. And so I would say absolutely people who really want to dig deep into the technology side. For people like me who are super topical, I think just like dive in, see what happens. It is a low barrier. A lot of tools have no cost entry. You can be creative. You can explore. You can see what happens and go from there. But you just have to be willing to give it a try. It's super easy. It's actually quite fun. Just dig in with no fear. And then if you want to make a career of it and go super, super deep, consider taking classes from someone like Helena.
So Helena, talk to us about what classes are available and how this works for just the general public.
Okay. The course that I teach is part of the MBA program. It's a graduate level course. Doesn't have prerequisites, and I made it that way so that students can feel comfortable taking it. Now, that doesn't mean I forgo the technology and how, like, for example, neural networks really learn, or natural language processing, which in combination with neural networks have made ChatGPT possible, and how have they done that? But I do, like I said earlier, emphasize the applications. But in addition to my course, we also have certificates in AI and business analytics. All those were specifically created for the needs that you're discussing now. If you are out in the workforce and you just want to hone in on your skills, you want to go beyond teaching yourself, you want to get more in depth, you can get a certificate in on an undergraduate level in business analytics and AI, or on a graduate level in artificial intelligence. So those are options we put out there, particularly, as I said, for the workforce. Mm-hmm. You can also come to our lab at sale, because one of the reasons it was created, as I mentioned earlier, was for an experiential learning experience for students, but it's also there for use by the community. So for example, augmented reality is being used for training by companies like Walmart, Verizon. Okay, so if you want to learn, or you want to learn how to use it to train employees about a particular area, you're welcome to come to the lab and have a discussion with us and create an application for it using our HoloLens. And we also have virtual reality. So the lab is there for community involvement and engagement, as well as for an experiential learning for students. But the two are not mutually exclusive, because if you come to the lab and you say, I want to learn how to use augmented reality in marketing, so we will work with you to make that happen. But that's also a learning experience for students. And moreover, they can see, how is the community using AI? What are their interests?
All right. Thank you so much. Let's go to the phones for just a moment. Steve is in Anchorage. Hello, Steve.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I guess the biggest one is, as she mentioned, she just laid off a lady that had spent probably thousands of dollars in her education, has rent and groceries to pay, also her salary pays into tax and such like that. But what considerations on the financial impact between either unemploying professionals, making higher education sort of a moot point, and or the responsibility of taxation? Does a company get to bill more or because they've got AI, or should they be billing less? And then, of course, comes to the taxation of the revenues generated by AI. So thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Steve, for the questions. And I would imagine that I'll start with you, Meredith, before we take a break and let you and Gretchen answer. And I'm sure that Helena also has thoughts about the fact that advanced education will still be needed.
Meredith. Yeah, Steve, great question. But on the flip side of when I let that person go, I gave a marketing coordinator a $20,000 raise because she was using the tool, and she is so valuable to me that I couldn't imagine my life and job without her. So there is a flip side to that coin. It is, as Gretchen said, it's not entirely that, you know, AI is taking their job. It's that, are you leveraging it? Are you using it? Are you using it to be really smart and high impact in small businesses where labor is our highest cost? So there's that. On the terms of, is education, you know, getting disrupted so radically to the point that it's irrelevant, I think educators like Helena certainly add so much value. And if I had the time to dive into taking her program, and maybe I will, I'm going to look into her certificate, but that's literally actually why my business exists. It's like it is actually becoming an alternative to going to law school, people getting master's degrees. Like I have rocket engineers that are in my program now, which blows my mind, but it's because they are looking for a different path to pivot and reskill and upskill themselves. And so there is, I think, going to be this proliferation of, essentially, there's the model of going to school after you're 18 and then riding that wave of education is no longer sufficient. It has to be a continual upgrade, and leaning into that and having fun with it, not creating a lot of contraction around it. But yeah, I think we are disrupting that model. And the way I think about it is that I'm thinking of my team, who I'm like heavily invested in, but also who is my AI workforce? Who are my AI employees? And I'll give you a quick example. So we have a big community group. People are asking tons of questions every day. And I pay 6 coaches, which is a decent expense unto itself, to answer those questions. But people want questions answered now. We are an immediate kind of population now, right? Like, that's how we operate. We want answers. when we ask, contact customer service, et cetera. We don't want to wait. So I ended up adding in this AI tool that searches and queries all the coaching calls, all my course content, all the past comments, and it will then give an answer to someone's question that is referenced in the citation of where that material came from. And that is giving a better experience to my members while still having coaches that are invaluable. So I guess the big thing here is that both are important for a small business.
Gretchen, do you want to follow up there before we take a break?
Yeah, just really quick. I should have mentioned that the SBDC is actually embedded at UAA, and so we're within the university system. So this is a little bit of like drinking the Kool-Aid of UAA, but I think that UAA has done a really good job, as evidenced by the programs Helena was referencing, of meeting people where they are, and it's really focused on a culture of lifelong learning. And so you can get a certificate in AI. You can learn about this, and I think higher education, the need for higher education isn't going to go away. I think one of the things you get from higher education is critical thinking, and of course many other things, but you can carry that skill forward. And so just kind of looking at your career as sort of a very, hopefully very long runway, where can you add little elements of education to improve your skill set and stay current? UAA is there to kind of help people do that, whether it's in AI or in other fields. And so, again, I'm actually very proud of how UAA has kind of met this moment and is going forward.
And isn't it really important to also, if I'm understanding this correctly, we're talking about artificial intelligence. A friend of mine says that drives him crazy. It should be called imitation intelligence because it has to be based on human direction. Another friend, a professor at Berkeley, Bill Drummond, just said this morning that a computer science professor he heard a lecture with recently said it should be called counterfeit people. So you mentioned critical thinking. I mean, without humans setting up the system, AI really couldn't do anything on its own.
I agreed. Helena,
go ahead,
probably
Helena,
knows more.
Yeah, I was going to say, no, you're absolutely correct, because the humans are the ones coding it. So you'll still need humans to do that. And we are not in general AI yet, where it has cognitive ability. That's a ways off. So right now it can create and design, but it still is dependent on humans. At the end of the day, they're doing the coding and have the expertise to really bring it forward and bring it to the next step. And one last comment I wanted to make about the education was that you asked me, why did I start the course? Well, part of the reason was that I feel it is a responsibility of universities to look at what are the needs of the students. Where can we make them successful? Where are the gaps? How can we close those gaps? And learning about artificial intelligence is certainly one of the ways to do that.
Excellent.
My classes are always full. Students are eager to learn. And as I said, that is a responsibility that the university should take on.
Yeah, an excellent point. We're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about AI, artificial intelligence use for small business, and how that can help Alaska businesses as Talk of Alaska continues statewide. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about artificial intelligence and its use for small business in Alaska. In the studio with me today is Gretchen Fowski, who is the Director of Special Programs and Strategy at the Alaska Small Business Development Center in Anchorage. And Meredith Noble is in the studio, and Meredith is the CEO and co-founder of LearnGrantWriting.org. On the line with us is Dr. Helena Wisnowski. Helena is a professor of entrepreneurship and teaches marketing, logistics, and business analytics within the College of Business and Public Policy at UAA. And she also holds the Marion Porter Endowed Chair there. You can join our conversation if you have questions about AI's application for your business, or you're considering a new plan and want to see what AI might help in that respect. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. Helena, at the beginning of the program, I mentioned that AI was used during the development of the COVID-19 vaccine. Talk about that. What was AI's use in this regard?
Okay. Both Moderna and Pfizer were the two companies who I'm aware of actually used AI in the development. And with the development of the vaccine came a lot of coding and also sequencing. As you may know, that Moderna actually used RNA sequencing. So AI was able to really speed up the development. And what would have taken years to develop, that Moderna only took 65 days from sequencing to dosing. So that is a huge record, something that would have taken years. So not only in the sequencing, if you look at, think about sequencing of the different combinations of RNA that could be used, for example, or sequencing of the different types of drugs, that is a Herculean effort. And that's something that AI is really good at. And that's one of the areas that it really helped. Mm-hmm. It also helped cut down on the time where it's necessary so that employees could concentrate on other things and think more strategically about the drugs than spending all the time doing the sequencing that AI was really very good at. It's also used in cancer diagnostics because it's excellent at pattern recognition. And so again, speeding up the diagnosis, not giving up the accuracy. In fact, it's been like in the 90 percentile accurate, and in some cases more accurate than humans, depending on the type of cancer. Mm. So those are some examples currently where it's used. But the future is in personalized medicine, and that's where you get into techniques called digital twins.
Yes.
And so maybe we could talk about that later because that'll take a little bit of a discussion. But the bottom line is that 38 to 75% of medications are ineffective. That's according to the USDA. And so how do you really make them more effective? And that's what it's about.
You know, it's so fascinating to learn the backstory about how AI helped with the development of the COVID-19 vaccine. I don't think there was enough recognition or understanding of that. And boy, that sure could have helped people feel more confident, because I know I had a lot of questions and people asking questions about how did they do it so quickly. So it would have been good to have better understanding about that. But Helena, I do want to delve into the digital twins, what the meaning of that is. And you mentioned that there is a business in Anchorage that can provide that service now. So tell us what digital twinning is and who's doing this service. What does it help with?
Okay. I will do that in a second, but regarding Moderna, I also organize and run the AI webinar series for the university. And last year, I had the person in charge, the chief data analyst and AI intelligence officer for Moderna, was my speaker. And he went through details of how AI really sped up the development of the COVID vaccine. If someone is interested, I can certainly provide that video. But I'll just put that out there, a little paid advertisement or unpaid advertisement for UAA webinar series. But anyway, to your question, a digital twin is a virtual representation of a real world entity or process. But let me be a little bit broader about that. Simulations have existed for many years. So you could have a 3D simulation of, let's say, an engine in an aircraft and look at its performance. But what's different with the digital twin is now we're going to have actually a bridge between the actual asset and the simulation, so that you can look at a complex system, look at the data, historical data, information for other assets, and real-time inputs from the physical world. So back to the engine, if you're having a lack of performance and you want to see, do I need to get a new engine? Should I repair it? What should I do? You could have a digital twin of that engine, and because it can't, the AI will be providing historical data, you could see how similar engines performed previously and what was done. So you're doing a what-if analysis, but you're looking at the actual asset. And then you're feeding back information into the actual asset and then seeing what kind of action should be taken. So it's like a big feedback control system, if you will, that connects the real world with the simulation.
And didn't you say that this technology could be used like to simulate if somebody's having a heart issue?
Yes, yes. Siemens Corporation actually created a digital twin of a heart. And so that's very exciting development.
It is exciting and fascinating. I want to talk a little bit about some of the, you know, I mean, these are huge concepts, but let's talk about just some of the practical day-to-day things. Meredith, you mentioned that in your business, you had a video project that you needed to record, and you used AI for a shot list. And for folks that aren't familiar with what a shot list is, it's when a videographer is going out, you need to figure out, okay, I know I'm going to need these exact shots as part of what I need to gather to put this story together. So talk about how you used AI in that setting.
Sure. I mean, literally, my marketing coordinator used ChatGPT and asked for some, what are some B-roll ideas? Boom, gave them to me, and it was a matter of seconds. It was done. So it wasn't anything super fancy. And I think that's what my perspective is in this conversation, is sort of AI for dummies. Because, I mean, the way I approach it is, okay, the best way I can think about it is when I started my business 8 years ago, I talked to a local angel investor, and I told him I was going to start learning how to code. And he said, oh, that's stupid. You don't need to learn how to code. You just need to learn how to manage folks who can code. And I realized that it's essentially the skill I'm still bringing now into this. Like, I'm learning how to manage AI. I'm not becoming a prompt engineer. I'm not becoming super deeply knowledgeable about it because I'm a little bit too buried in my day-to-day as a business owner. So I guess if I can give like some tactical suggestions, one would be I really enjoy listening to Everyday AI, the podcast. They do a weekly roundup on Mondays, and it just gives you like what's happening with all the big players in the industry. And I just find it really insightful to listen to those things, because that's how it starts to loosen up some ideas for your business. And then if you wanted me to share how I think about applying AI in my business, I can, unless you want to save it for later.
I don't know where that came from. We will talk about that in a minute, but I wanted to get to I know that Gretchen, you or Meredith, no, I do want to stay with you for a moment. You also, in talking about video editing, you mentioned concerns about video editing and voice manipulation. Tell us about the example you saw and what the risk is that you see here.
Well, I'm not a futurist and I'm not a doomsday person, so I'm not the perfect person to explain this, but essentially I attended a mastermind where some people like me produce a ton of video content and things do get dated, and it's a really big pain to go have to refilm all of that stuff. And so what they were able to do is slice in the new content, and it looked exactly like the guy. It looked just like his face. His mouth was moving, and it didn't look weird. It didn't look like his whole facial expression matched. And they were able to slice in the edited section of his video, which is great if you're someone like me that has hundreds of hours of coaching content out there and you don't want to refilm it. But that's not so great in potentially, you know, political warfare situations where all of a sudden now we can use, you know, we can take Barack Obama's face and we can have him say something that he definitely didn't say, but it looks so real. And with the way that, of course, things pass through media so quickly, like, when would it ever be tested for its truth? So obviously those are concerns that a person can have. And, you know, another example would be, I actually literally learned this today in that Everyday AI podcast, was Figure 01 has this tool called the Humanoid, and it's essentially like an AI-powered robot, right? Because I always felt like, okay, it's these white-collar jobs that are under threat, but who's going to still build a building? But what they were able to show is that this robot was able to do under human command a lot of basic tasks, like put the dishes away and get breakfast and bring it to you. And all of a sudden that makes you realize, wow, that could be, you know, every cleaning job in a hotel could be replaced. So there's definitely this scale that's really big, and I honestly haven't spent a ton of time thinking about it, to be honest. But the reality is, like, it's I guess there's two sides to this, and I'm personally just looking at, like, how can I use it? And I'm using it in a very, like, low-dose, low-intense way. Like, I'm using it in the most basic way that's super accessible to any business owner. And so I just want that to be something that their listeners are hearing, is that it doesn't have to be overly complicated. I'm using it in a very simple way.
Well, and I think it's really, it's great that we can talk about how broad a sweep there is available, from very low-end, just very small tasks, maybe rewriting something for you so it sounds better, or enormous, you know, just unbelievable ideas, such as Helena was talking about digital twinning and how that can help us in the future. Gretchen, you mentioned a concern about customer service becoming too reliant on chatbots. What are your concerns about that?
Oh, yeah, that's more of a personal concern. I'm sure many people have had the experience of you're like trying to ask your airline something, or you're on some sort of like website you shopped at and you have a question. And so you're using the chatbot. It's clear it's a chatbot, but it's incapable of answering the question you have. I forget exactly which website I was on, but I'm pretty sure that they had only like loaded in a few pat answers. Like maybe they answered three common questions or something. And what I was asking was way beyond the scope of what this chatbot was able to do. But they had buried their contact information under so many layers that I just couldn't reach a real person. And so that was really frustrating for me. And I think it's a little bit of a cautionary tale to businesses who are thinking about using AI, where like these tools exist for efficiency, to free up your time so you can focus more on what really matters to you and where you bring like that special something that can't be replaced by AI. But don't over rely on it, because you still want to be able to reach your customers. You want to have those contacts, and it can do as much as it can. But I am not convinced that it can actually replace humans. I've seen a lot of people use it in writing. For now, I can usually tell when someone has used ChatGPT to write something. And when I compare an AI-generated marketing content to something that the brilliant writer on my team can write, it is night and day, and I would always rather read something written by a human than something written by AI.
We're going to take a quick break, but before we do, should I assume when I go to websites and a little chat pops up and there's a face and a name there, is it always AI, or are some businesses maybe during the day actually having people online that pop in and answer questions? Who knows?
I'd like to think it's the latter, but it's probably AI.
All right, we are going to
usually ask. I said, are you a human or are you a chatbot?
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. And they're honest and will answer.
Well, it depends. But then if I hang in there long enough, a human actually does come on.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Yeah.
The chatbot initially.
Yes.
So.
All right. Well, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the very wide and many uses of artificial intelligence for business and everyday life as Talk of Alaska continues. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are talking about artificial intelligence and AI's use for small business in Alaska and what the potentials are for the future. Our numbers statewide are 1-800-478-8255 if you'd like to join our conversation, have a comment in our final minutes here of the show. 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Meredith was talking before the break about the concerns over video and audio manipulation. Before the 2018 elections, I went to the Kennedy School at Harvard for a quick little intensive session on how do we combat mis and disinformation online. And at that time, there were tools available where you could actually tell if video, if you looked at the back end data, you could tell that it had been manipulated, maybe put together from two or three different time periods or different locations. But a couple of years later, the Information Disorder Lab, which is set up there at the Kennedy School, sent out a notice saying it's no longer possible to do that. You can't tell now, which was really alarming to me. And so, Helena, I want to turn to you about the ethics of using AI and what you see as the risks, and how can we counter those risks before, as you said, AI advances even more and gets to the point where it's doing its own thing.
Well, the ethics of AI and biases go back to the humans during the original coding. So just like now you have programs apart from AI that humans are involved in. And so I think it goes back to the individual humans, and that's the responsibility again of theirs to not include things that are not ethical or are, I'll leave it at that, but I think it goes back to the humans. It's not something that's in the technology. So that's the core of it. Just, they used to have a saying in programming, garbage in, garbage out. Well, the same thing here, bias and unethical processes in, the same thing will be generated. So
how does that get fixed? That sounds concerning. As you were talking, I was thinking about some reporting we did not too long ago about facial recognition technology and how there's bias built into those systems because they were developed by white people and used mainly, well, all white people to model the system. And so it misidentifies people of color or people with darker skin. How do we correct these things? That seems like a big concern.
Well, I'll say one thing. I had a company in facial recognition. This was many years ago, and I did not have a bias for race or ethnic groups. It worked perfectly well across, and I know why that was the case. So again, it goes back to the people creating the algorithms that they don't pay attention to it. And you're right, they don't test it in enough cases, but that isn't in the endemic, in the algorithm itself. It's how people are creating it and testing it. So as I said, my company did not have a problem across ethnic groups and it didn't have those biases.
So for the areas that are of concern or unethical bad actor uses that are possible in the future, you know, we already know that people get scammed daily online and by phone from ripoff artists. And as AI dials in discussion, that seems like that could be a larger problem. So how do you think that should be handled? Should Congress weigh in? Do you think lawmakers understand it well enough to regulate it?
I don't think government regulation is the total solution. And you made a point, I don't think many of the regulators in the government really understand it enough to correct it. I think you need people who understand it and can maybe affect changes or corrections. I think that's a big requirement.
Mm-hmm. Gretchen, you wanted to add in.
Oh, I did. I'm with Helena. I'm not sure that government is the only answer, but I will say that I know it's being discussed in government. The White House launched AI.gov, and so you can start to see where the highest levels of government are thinking about AI. I think there's also some conversations happening in Congress around AI, and so it's coming. Regulation is definitely a hot topic. Where it's going to land, I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. And what, when you talk to business owners, how do you talk about the ethical uses and how to guard against, you know, nefarious uses of AI?
So at the recent AI summit we held, we did have a focus on cybersecurity, and that was a very well-attended panel. People are very interested in that, and so I suspect we'll be trying to build some sort of workshop around the topic to help people. Otherwise, I mean, similar to what Meredith was saying earlier, we're helping people at more of like a topical efficiency level, and so most people aren't grappling yet with like extreme ethical use. Fortunately, I think they're really just focusing on, you know, making their businesses flow more smoothly, making ends meet, that kind of thing. But ethics are a concern, and it is a place that we probably need to explore more and dig into. I've seen a few codes of ethics online and that kind of thing. We could ask ChatGPT to put together some ethics for us and see how that turns out. But I'm really glad you made that point, because ethics are a big consideration, and this is going to be a huge part of how we shape our future world.
And Meredith, how do you deal with that in your business when you're training people? How do you talk to them about making sure that they're using best practices and ethical considerations, so that people don't just start churning out mass, you know, amounts of kind of watered down proposals with AI and maybe degrading the efforts that you're trying to promote?
I'm not sure I have a great answer, except I can say that everything we know, we have to be open to it changing right now. So, for instance, the way that we've understood consulting, because that's what I primarily teach, how you make money as a consultant, I'm actually questioning everything about how I teach it right now, because how do we define value now that it's not about, you know, brute force and quantity of time put into generating that value? And so I'm honestly overhauling how I'm thinking about it, and it's and frankly, I'm jumping back into the grant consulting side of things literally this week and with the kickoff in late April, just because I want to be on the front lines of what this means in terms of like a completely different business model. And if we can figure it out for grant writing, it's going to translate to a number of different industries. And so in terms of, you know, I don't typically cover questions around ethics. I get more issues around the privacy of information when people are uploading grant narratives, et cetera. They want to make sure, especially if it's a science and research-based project, how is that information protected? And so that's what we discuss in our the tools that we've built in-house. But I guess I don't think I've got anything super deep to be able to add to it, except that it's, because again, I think I'm playing ball and just trying to keep up with it as a typical small business owner as well.
And Helen, turning to you, what are your thoughts about what's needed here and what the way forward should look like?
In terms of
for
which area?
Regulation or ensuring that, you know, AI is used for good intent and not so much for bad intent.
I don't know if there's a way to ensure that, but I'd like to just pick up a point that Gretchen mentioned, cybersecurity.
Yes, please.
I think that is a really important area, because as AI advances, so do cyber threats, and making businesses aware of it. And also be careful with ChatGPT, because it's open AI. So you don't want to put out information that could be traced back to you that's very personal or company centric. But cybersecurity is a really big concern, and there are ways to safeguard with respect to that.
And Gretchen, going back to you in our final couple of minutes here, you suggested that people shouldn't hesitate. They should just experiment. You know, we've been talking about some of the ethical concerns, but what's the easiest way for folks who are completely unfamiliar and maybe a little nervous or apprehensive about AI? What should they try first?
Oh, gosh, that's a great one. We've referenced it a few times, and I think it just is sort of the tool of the moment. But ChatGPT is incredibly easy to play with. I used it for the first time less than a year ago. I think it was we were farther into breakup last year, and I jumped on and just said, what would one pack if you were coming to Alaska during the breakup season? And it literally described the outfit I was wearing, which was bizarre, but also like, I mean, completely silly and fun and whatever. But you can just play around with fun things like that. So just get comfortable playing. There's a lot of image generating things that people like to use. I've played around with headshots. There's all sorts, like, it's open, it's creative, it's fun. I think Meredith wants to add something.
Yes, mm-hmm. Meredith, and I wanted to ask you to follow up there in our last minute here. How do you ensure that people's content is safe? Because we've seen a lot of cases of authors and other folks saying, hey, quit using our stuff to teach your AI programs.
Ours is private, and so that's why I'm keeping it as an in-house tool right now. And it's completely private to that person's use case. So it's not training on anyone else's grants. So that's how ours is secure. So can I answer the
Absolutely.
Question about
yep.
how to make this useful for small business? Okay, so the first thing I recommend is writing down what are your biggest pain points in your business? What costs you a lot of money? What is soul-sucking? What do your employees not like doing? Write those things down. Then build a matrix. So I don't believe anything can't be solved with a good matrix. So what's high impact on the top, low impact at the bottom, and then on the right side would be easy to implement, and on the left side would be complex. Now go take those pain points that you have brainstormed and park those in this matrix, and then prioritize only pursuing those that are high impact and easy, and that will make a huge difference.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much. This hour went by really fast. Thanks to my guest today, Gretchen Fosky, the Director of Special Programs and Strategy at the Alaska Small Business Development Center in Anchorage. Also in the studio is Meredith Noble. Meredith is the CEO and co-founder of LearnGrantWriting.org. And on the line today, Dr. Helena Wisnowski, who is a professor of entrepreneurship and teaches marketing, logistics, and business analytics at the College of Business and Public Policy at UAA. Thanks to our engineer, Chris Hyde, our producer, Madeline Rose, and on the phones, Ava White helped us out today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.